she wanted to take the placenta home with her, and I didn't know you had to bring a cooler to the hospital to do this. So I ordered her Taco Bell, and I got her some chalupas or whatever after she gave birth. So that's a Taco Bell baby. You should sponsor the baby, Taco Bell. And I put the placenta in the Taco Bell bag and smuggled it out of the hospital, and it is still in my freezer to this day.
So I love the way you were just chatting with us out there, saying you missed stripping in Guam.
Mm-hmm.
What did you miss about stripping in Guam?
So stripping in Guam is very different from anywhere else I've worked for a number of reasons. One of them being the clientele. It's mostly young military men. And it's like very much more kind of drinking bar fun party culture than say like a gentleman's club in LA, where it's going to be like some very old creeps who are probably cheating on their wives on their lunch break. Like, it's a very different vibe in general. And again, the buy me drinky thing. So like, we're getting paid to hang out and drink with them. Like, we don't even necessarily need to sell dances to make money. We just need to have a good time with these guys. And, you know, young military men, not always the brightest. So like, I would just have a lot of fun fucking with these dudes. It was just like a party all the time. And yeah, like I wasn't getting like sexually assaulted. Like, that's the only place I've danced where I've never been sexually assaulted. Like, any other place, like, men are trying to shove dollar bills in your asshole on stage, or like slip a finger in you in a private dance, or like push your boundaries. There, it was just a party. No one was touching me unconsensually. Like, it was fun. And yeah, I would just have so much fun trolling these guys. Like, I would just say the craziest things, do the craziest things. A lot of them, like, don't know about astrology or believe in it or give a fuck about it. And so I would be like, okay, well, you have to buy a private room with me if I can, like, guess five things about yourself that I shouldn't know, right? So then I'd ask them their birth information, and I'd do their birth chart, like, on my phone, and then, like, freak them the fuck out because I would know these things about their personalities or things that probably happened in their lives because of their astrology. And so then I would get private rooms with them. There was, of course, like the Australian submarine guy, who I never saw again after the very drunk, embarrassing incident. Me and my homegirl, who I moved from New Orleans with, I met her at a strip club in New Orleans. We were working in the French Quarter on the Bourbon Street, and she always says that she like forced the friendship on me because I would just be by myself at the club. I had just moved there. I didn't know anybody, and I'd just be sitting by myself, like working, making money, not trying to make friends. And she would just come sit by me every single shift and just start talking to me. And eventually I was like, all right. And then, you know, the pimps were coming after me. I'll talk about that. And so I moved her to Guam with me. And we would have fun, like, tag teaming dudes together. And so, like, we'd go up to, like, if there was two or more guys, we'd go up to them together and start talking to them. And if they weren't interested in getting dances with us, sometimes we would pretend to be aliens. And, like, they would say they wouldn't want dances. And so we'd be, like, just turn to each other and be like, and like get up and go like on cue together. And the guys would just be like, what the fuck just happened? There was another time we were with these group of guys, and this one guy was really into me, and he really wanted me to basically beat the fuck out of him. I've had a couple of clients like that. There was another guy in Austin, this rich dude, who just wanted me to beat the fuck out of him in rooms. But so I'm like slapping this guy up, and my friend gets uncomfortable. She's like, Tara, can you like not be so abusive to him like in public? And I was like, girl, shut the fuck up. And I bit his earlobe so hard it exploded in my mouth, which is so disgusting. I'm so grateful he didn't have any diseases. But I got him into a champagne room because I was just like fucking with this guy all night. And I was like, do you want to play Slippery Fish? And he was like, what, Slippery Fish? And I was like, well, like, you have to get the champagne room to see what this is. And so I had him get down to his underwear, and I'm just in a G-string, and he's on the couch, and I get the bottle of champagne, and I just dump it all over him, and then I lay down on top of him, like, literally just, like, sideways, and just start going, like, chest to chest with him on the couch. And I made so much money that night. They also, in Guam, do these things called buyouts where the guy can literally pay to take you out of the club, which is so sus. But it's not like, it's not prostitution. Like, a lot of girls do fuck when they get bought out, but then they'll charge more and like not give that half to the club. But you can just get, like, they'll buy you out for however many, like, the more hours it is, the more they pay. And then you like take them to after hours or like bar hopping and get them fucked up and just ditch them, which was always really fun. I had this one guy buy me out and take me to a music festival. And, like, the music festival was so lame, I left after, like, an hour, and he had bought the music festival tickets and bought me out for, like, $1,600.
And you disappeared.
And I disappeared. It was fun. Yeah, and I, like, there was a lot of Japanese and Korean tourists that would go to Guam on vacation, and, like, I had just gotten my butthole tattooed. I have a spider web around my butthole and like a string going up the crack and a black widow on my tailbone. That's what my podcast is called, the Haunted Hole Podcast, actually, because of my haunted hole. And so like I would, and it was a full nude club, all of them are. And so I'd be dancing, you know what I mean? And like looking at the Japanese tourists, and they always loved me. They always were like, oh, you're like such a pretty doll, but like with tattoos, oh my God. And so then I would, like, by the third song, when you take your underwear off, I'd be dancing, and then I'd turn around, like, behind and look at them and take my underwear off while looking at them, and then they see my butthole tattoo, and I loved watching their reactions. They were always just like, just like it was a lot of fun.
So you sent me, you texted me a list of stories that you wanted possibly share here today.
Yes.
Should I just introduce the topic and you'll go from there?
Let's do this.
Sneaking onto an Air Force base with in high school.
Yes.
By accident because I was drunk.
Yes. So in high school, I was at this house party and we were all fucking drunk. And me and this one guy leave to go to a friend's house. And I'm like, oh, I know how to get there. I know how to walk there. And like, we walk so far in the wrong direction, like miles. Cause I'm just yapping the whole time. Like, I just love to yap. So that I'm not like paying attention to where we're going. And then I'm like, oh, where the fuck are we? And I'm like, oh, we went in the way wrong direction. I'll get us back. Right. And he's annoyed at this point, obviously. And so I go where I think I'm getting us back. And then all of a sudden, and this is in Albuquerque, all of a sudden we're at this giant metal gate with like lots of beams and bars and stuff. And I'm like, well, obviously we got to get over this to like go where we're going. So we scale this giant gate and then we're in this place and there's like not really anything around, some buildings in the distance. I see some streetlights like miles away. And I'm like, I don't know where the fuck we are. And he's like, Tara, yo, fuck you. Like, he was so pissed. And so he ditched me. He just went another way, like a different direction. But I was like, well, I'm going to go towards the street lights because, like, that's a point of orientation where I don't know where we are. We're in the middle of nowhere. And I'm in, like, short shorts and flip-flops. And then I just get to these fences and I'm hopping all these fences and they all have barbed wire on them. And I think I lose a flip-flop at one point. And then I get in this one area that's fenced off and there's all these big machines. And I don't think they were tanks, but it was like all these big machines that maybe some of them are vehicles. I was drunk. I don't know. And then eventually I hop more fences and like run through a field. And then I'm at these streetlights and my friends pick me up on a bike with a skateboard. And so like I'm biking with one flip flop home, my other homie skateboards, the other, and I pass out drunk and I wake up hella hungover to a bunch of missed calls. And apparently that was the Air Force base, the Kirkland Air Force base. And my friend got arrested by the Air Force police for trespassing. And they were like, yeah, your friend was in like a restricted area and we could have shot her. Like, she's banned. And they gave them my name. They were snitches for no reason. I don't know why they needed to give them my name. But I've never like tried to confirm or deny if I'm banned from all Air Force bases. How was that story?
You grew up in Albuquerque.
Yeah, born and raised.
Born and raised.
Got into a lot of trouble.
Did you see Breaking Bad?
That show was a documentary, for sure.
Of life in Albuquerque?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, the first time I smoked crack, I was probably, like, 13.
And meth is big there.
Oh, yeah. Meth is huge there. I've done, yeah. So, like, well, okay, so the first time I smoked weed, my stepdad thought it would, I was, like, six. My stepdad thought it would be funny to blow weed into a balloon and have me inhale it. But, like, I started smoking weed of my own volition in middle school. My parents were hippies, so they grew weed and smoked weed. I was always around it. But like a lot of the schwag, by the way, kids, it used to be schwag, not chronic. It was like fucking crumbs. Most of it was fucking laced with PCP or meth in Albuquerque, like straight up. I had so many crazy highs just off of weed in middle school as a teenager. That shit was wild. And yeah, meth, like, I think one of the first times I know I smoked meth was when I was got pulled from boarding school. But then there was another time where I legitimately was like, yeah, I want to smoke meth with my friend BJ, who was a meth head. And he was speedballing. He was like shooting meth and heroin. I think he's alive now. He found God and got sober. But I smoked meth with him. And I was in college. And I remember immediate, like, just pure meth out of a pookie. I immediately felt, like, this warm sensation over my whole body, and I got super horny. It was, like, ecstasy for, like, 15 seconds, and I tried to get on him, and he was like, no, 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 just wait. He was a good friend. Thank you, BJ, for being a good guy, kind of. And then I just felt like I was fucking on top of the world. And I was like, oh, I get why people love meth. This feels amazing. And I was like, we were smoking meth all day, driving all over. We went to this one lady's house who he was like, she's like the female Walter White in Albuquerque. And she had like all of this stolen merchandise in her garage and was like just giving me shit. And I would like, I don't know, I had the best fucking day on meth. But then the come down happened, and that was the worst come down of my life. And I was like, oh, I'm never smoking weed again or meth again. And I just never did because the come down wasn't worth it to me. That's my meth story. Well, one of them.
Having a seizure in Berlin and then going out.
Yes. I was taking Prazosin for a while. It's prescribed for PTSD to like help with night terrors and stuff. And so it does actually help with sleeping. And so this was after I moved to LA. I moved to LA 2016 from Austin. And then I've been kind of in an LA up until the pandemic when I kind of like got stuck here. And so one of my escapades, I like had saved up some, you know, stripper money or whatever. And I fucked off to Europe for a few months, and I was like bouncing around Europe. And so when I was in Berlin, I had really bad jet lag, so I took more Prazosin than I should have, and I had a seizure. I like all of a sudden, one second I was standing up and the next second I was on the floor flopping and pissed myself. And then I got up and I texted my best friend at the time, Bex, whose name used to be here. And I was like, yo, I just had a seizure. She was like, you should go to the hospital. And I was like, I think I'm fine. And I went out clubbing and I went out to Sisyphus and I was there till Okay, so that was during the day, right? And then I go out to a bar, meet this old German man at this local bar by my Airbnb with only old German people. And I actually got kicked out of the bar because I got in a fight with this other older man because I was telling him he was racist because he was saying racist shit about Africans. And he was like, I'm not racist. And I was like, that's literally racism. So I got kicked out of that bar, go to this other bar with this random old German man, and then he was being weird, so I ditch him and go to the club Sisyphus at night. And then, I don't know, I'm just doing pills that people are giving me. And then I'm there till 11 a.m. the next day. And then I decide at 11 a.m. I should go to Berghain. So then I go to Berghain and I stand in line, and I'm standing in line behind this group of dudes. It's like five dudes and they're speaking French. And like, I speak French because I, you know, studied French. So I start speaking in French to them, and they kind of like just adopted me into their group. And so then we like get up to the door in Berghain. It's like, oh, are you going to get let in or not? And so they're like, well, let's split up individually, because if like a group gets denied, no one can go in. But if you split up, maybe at least some of you can get in, was their logic. And so like we, all of us except one of them get in. We get in, and then they're just feeding me ketamine. And like, I did more ketamine that night than I've probably done in my entire life combined besides that night. And I remember one of them was just like holding me by the hand, and I felt like a balloon floating, like that he was holding me. Like I didn't have a body. I was just floating through all these rooms. And I remember like we go to the bathroom, and there's all these like leather daddies like fucking outside of the bathrooms. And then we go to another room downstairs, and there's like a bunch of Himalayan salt, like lamp crystal rocks, and like people in white meditating. And then we go to this other room, and it's like this crazy bass music. And like, I wanted to dance so bad, but I didn't have a body. So I had to like relearn how to use my body. And I remember literally like consciously being like, okay, like move your arms. You can now you like move so I could dance. And then I was at Berghain till 11 a.m. the next day. And then I leave and I get on the tram to go to the Airbnb, and my makeup is like, my lipstick is like, I look rough. And all these old ladies on the tram are looking at me, and I'm just like, that's that story. Okay. Oh, and then Bex's sugar daddy actually got me a flight to New York from Berlin, and he's weird. That's another story.
Chasing a kidnapper on the freeway.
Okay, so on the way from New Orleans to Guam, me and my friend were driving, and next to us, we see this car, and there was like a skull, like a real looking skull in the back windshield. And then we look over, and there's this little there's this creepy old man. Like, he's so fucking scary creepy. Like, just the whole thing just gave us chills. And then we see this little boy, right, in the passenger seat, and he goes to the window and puts his hand on it and mouths help at us. And then the creepy old man sees him and pushes him into the floor area, the front of the car. And so Shane's like, girl, follow him. I'm calling the cops. And so I start following this, and once he pushes the boy down, he speeds off. We're on the highway, close to getting into Albuquerque from Santa Fe. And I just fucking chase him. And I'm actually a really good driver. Like, I could be a stunt driver, a precision driver specifically, because I'm really good at obstacles and like in and out of traffic. So I'm chasing this fucking kidnapper man, what we assume, in and out of the highway, going like 110 miles an hour, like just avoiding shit. I have really like fast reflexes and thinking. And we chase him like from Santa Fe to Albuquerque, in the city off the freeway, back on the freeway to like one of the pueblos in between Albuquerque and Santa Fe. And then eventually he stops, and we corner him, and we have like the cops come, and then we leave. And then I drove back to Albuquerque, and we went to a bar. That was crazy.
Scaling a cliff on acid. at a canyon rave?
Okay, that was in college. In New Mexico, there's a bunch of like desert raves and mountain raves and canyon raves, which is really cool. I was dating this one guy. I'm sorry I was so mean to you, Josh. You didn't deserve it. This guy I was dating at the time took me and my friend to this canyon rave. It's all these fucking hippies. What do they call them? Like Wookiees or something? Ugh, God, sorry, but not my thing. But we go anyways. And we're doing acid. And like me and my friend scale the canyon and find this little cave. And we're like watching everyone, like bird's point of view, talking mad shit. And we came up with this saying, like, I'm a wretched cunt and this is a sick shame. And we agreed on getting a tattoo of it. And only I did on my ass cheek. She didn't. It's been covered and it needs to be covered again. But anyways, we're just making fun of everybody and over it. Like, it's just so corny. But it was beautiful, like the music going between the canyon walls. But then, so then the morning comes, we're still up off acid. I do like a headstand for like 5 minutes. And then some of the guys are trying to climb a canyon, like a cliff face. And I'm like, pussies, I'm gonna do it. And so I start climbing the cliff face. And like, I grew up like climbing churches and houses and trees and rock climbing. And so like, I'm actually really good at climbing. So I just start scaling this cliff face. And like, as I go, more and more guys are dropping out. And I was just like, and so I finally like, it's like the sun is coming up and I get to the top of this crazy high cliff. And I'm just like running up and down the edge of this cliff and the sun came up and like no one else was up there. And that was cool. Dangerous. My ex actually fell a little bit and hurt himself trying to follow me.
Mm.
I was so mean to him.
You used to do seances as a kid?
So my stepsister still lived with us before she ran away. Some of our friends would come over and we'd like do witchcraft and we'd like do seances where we would like, you know, have a Ouija board and like summon a ghost. And I was always the possession vessel. And like, I'm a really good actress and also a little bit sensitive to that stuff. Like, I've definitely seen ghosts, especially in New Mexico, like throughout my life. But so like, you know what I mean? I would be possessed by like a spirit or whatever. And this one time I was possessed by this like lady and she was really freaking my sister out. And like, I wouldn't snap out of it. And so she just started smacking me in the face till I like snapped out of it. A lot of kids got told they couldn't hang out with me because of witchcraft.
So you would have Joe rape you instead of your younger niece.
Yeah, that's Joe, the neighbor boy, who has a daughter now.
Great.
I hope she's safe. He had a younger niece who was even younger than me. He was older than me, and the niece was younger than me. She was probably like a fucking toddler when this was happening. And he would try to rape her, and I would be like, no, just rape me, you know what I mean? And like try to take him to a different room so he wouldn't touch her, but he definitely was touching her. And I really wish there was some way I could find her and reach out to her too. But yeah, he was a sick kid. He also tried to rape my kittens and like tried to get me to fuck my kittens and stuff. Like he was a really demented young boy. And I just, you know, I've always had this like urge to protect others, like felt like, I don't know, I somehow could take it. You know what I mean? Like I can be really strong for other people. And like I said, in relationships, I martyr myself a lot. That's kind of like something I do, but I really do have like an instinct to protect people that I feel like I can protect, you know, take them under my wing. So I did what I could, but obviously like I couldn't save her, unfortunately. Although I did save her from some stuff because I got raped a lot.
There were older men that were trying to get you to raped by dogs?
Yeah. I don't know if it was my godfather or like Joe, that neighbor boy's dad. It might have been Joe's dad. Like we were at this dude's house and I remember that Joe was there. And so it was these two grown men And these two dogs were chasing me around the backyard trying to hump me and like violently hold me down and hump me. And these grown men were just watching, laughing. And I was running, screaming and crying. And like at one point, like climbed up on a table to try to get away from them.
You were how old?
Seven.
Yikes.
Seven, eight. So these, and I'm small now. Like I was tiny as a kid. These dogs were big dogs. Like they were literally pinning me down and like, it was so fucked up. Maybe that's why he was trying to rape animals. Maybe his dad had some weird animal rape shit going on. I just thought of that. That's fucked up.
Helping your sister get your stuff out of your parents'
house?
Oh.
Yes. So, maybe 4 years ago now. So my mom, my whole life has been like, I'm finally divorcing your stepdad. I'm over it. And I'll, you know, want to support her and believe that it's true. And I would offer to drop everything in my life, move back from Austin or LA to help her because she's disabled. And I'm like, I feel like part of the reason why she stays is because she feels like she needs someone there, you know. So, and then, but then 2 days later, she doesn't end up leaving him. And I'm like, all right. But so this time it had been like 9 months of her saying she's leaving my stepdad and he was living at like some fucking commune in New Mexico, somewhere south. And my stepsister had been living with my mom in the house with her boyfriend and son. And then towards the end of it, I think my stepdad kind of freaked out that he was losing control and decided actually he didn't want them to be over. So he came back to the house, like took back over and kicked my sister and her boyfriend and son out of the house. And a mutual in Albuquerque calls me. I'm living in LA at the time. And she's like, hey, I think Francis is going to kill your mom. Like, I'm really scared. Like, I think, and I've always had that fear that he's going to kill my mom, whether by accident, in rage or on purpose because of losing his disability paycheck that my mom gets. And so, you know, and usually when women try to leave an abusive relationship, that's when it becomes the most dangerous and a lot of women get murdered. So I was like, okay, fuck, I'll come back. But I like didn't have any money. So I bought a flight on layaway and I fly to Albuquerque the next day to one, help my sister get her stuff out of there, support her. And two, to try to help support my mom and get her out of it, like protect her. And so I fly there. I'm staying with this one girl. I meet up with my sister. And so the first day me and my sister go to the house, I guess my stepdad had gotten a job for the first time in like decades at the VA. So he's gone. And we talked to my mom and everything's cool. And I gave her a brochure I got of like basically helping like disabled people who are being abused leave, like by their caretakers leave. I left that for her and we got some of my sister's stuff and we talked to my mom. We were like, okay, we're gonna come back tomorrow with more people to help grab the heavier furniture and stuff. And she's like, all good. And so then it's the next day and me and my sister are drinking a little bit with some friends and we text my mom and we're like, hey, we're gonna come get the stuff. And she's like, you can't come without a police presence. And I'm like, what the fuck? And then I realize, oh, she must have told Francis, the stepdad, we came by, and he got mad that we were there, and now he's controlling the situation and saying we can't come without the cops. So you're letting him control you again. And that was really triggering for me, so I kind of went off on my mom and, like, you know, yelled at her via text a lot. And we tried to call the cops and see if they could give us an escort, but they were like, well, you have to schedule it, and it's only for 15 minutes. And I'm like, they have so much shit. This is so fucking stupid. She legally has been living there, has a house key. Like, it's not legal for them to tell her she can't get her stuff. And by that time, we had been drinking more, and I was angry as fuck. So I'm like, you know what? We have the key. Let's just fucking go. So we all march up, and I'm like, angrily walking in front of everybody with the key, and the girl who called me to come is behind me and she has her phone out filming because she's like, oh, this is about to be crazy. So I go up I unlock the door. I open it. Francis is in the living room. I start yelling at him, calling him a piece of shit and a weak whatever the fuck. And then yelling at my mom, calling her weak whatever the fuck. And I'm like, we're getting their shit. Like, this is illegal. You can't not let her get her shit. And so then I just start grabbing stuff. Or no. I walk in. I'm yelling. And then a girl walks up, right, with the cell phone filming. And I see my stepdad lunge at her. And I just jump on him and start punching him. And then we start fist fighting. I don't know. I just saw him lunge at my friend behind me. And so I just fucking snapped. And then all three of us are fist fighting. And then we fall on the couch. And then my mom comes up and punches me in the head three times and yells, "Get off my husband." And I'm like, "Husband, I thought you were divorcing this man." So that's when she was dead to me. And so eventually we stopped fighting. And then my sister and her boyfriend and her godmom, and I think that was it, come in and we're like getting their stuff out. And then my stepdad attacks me again. And then her godmom tries to get him off of me, and he gets her in a headlock, and then he gets me in a headlock, and I, like, get my jacket off, get out of it, and I start punching him again and get him off of her stepmom, and then we, like, move to the other part, and he picks me up by my vagina and slams me on the ground and is, like, fighting me from on top, and I guess I'm, like, holding his hair and kicking him, and my stepsister comes and grabs him and throws him off. And then she's like, "We got to get the fuck out of here." So then we all leave. And then, oh, and the whole time after my mom punched me in the head, she's on the phone with the cops saying, "They're attacking us. They're attacking us. They're attacking me. I'm disabled. They're attacking us." And I'm running in the room like, "Mom, stop fucking lying. Hey, cops, no one's getting attacked. We're just getting their shit. Stop fucking lying." And so then we leave, and then we go to the police station to give our side of the report, because obviously they're going to give a very different incident report. The cop who was talking to us, we showed him the video of, like, my stepdad lunging at the friend, and he was a super asshole, the cop. He, like, did not actually take my statement correctly. I had to call back weeks later after I got served. They were trying to charge me with 3 counts of battery. One for attacking my disabled mother. I just pushed her off of me. She didn't get hurt. And then 2 for attacking my stepfather, even though he was the one who started both of those. And I got, like, an email from their lawyer, and there's a picture of him holding a chunk of hair in his hand, his hair looking up all sad. And I was like, "You fucking crybaby victim all the time." But then, so I did the first court hearing over Zoom and told my side of the story, and I was also like, "You should look at all of those police records of when he put his hands on us and went to jail." So, like, and they dropped it. But yeah, I didn't talk to my mom for years. We actually only just started talking again, barely, because I thought she was really dead to me forever for the millionth time. I've cut her off a lot for, like, choosing my abusive stepdad over me. But, you know, the mother wound, that's the deepest one. I want my mother's love, you know? So let her back in. But this time I think it's different. She's going to therapy and, like, taking accountability and actually listening to me, you know? So we're talking. I would like to make amends with my mom and have a relationship with her. But that was that story.
What, you have the nickname Hands.
Oh my God, yeah. So,
how'd you get the name?
After Guam, I moved back to LA October 2019 into a warehouse with an ex-boyfriend from Austin who was an electrician, who I apprenticed for a bit because we were super codependent, and then this welder guy. And so I move in with them. I'm literally living on the couch under a table that they built. Like, and I was like, okay, we need to make some money. And I, you know, have been going to after hours forever because, like, I would get out of the strip club and be like, I want a party, so I'm going to go to an after hours. So I met a lot of after hours people. And so I contacted some of them, and they were looking for a new place because after hours spots get busted a lot, and then you have to find a new spot. So we started one at the warehouse I was living in because we also were behind on rent. Like, my ex went crazy. like psycho and like didn't, he was a crazy alcoholic and he had like a mental health issue, threatened to like kill this dude with an ice pick. It was a whole thing. But anyways, we start throwing after hours and we had this big stripper pole. I would like dance sometimes, but also manage a bunch of dancers. And this one night at the after hours, there weren't dancers and there was these drunk girls trying to get on the stage. And I was like, you are going to die. Like, I'm not trying to have this after hours shut down because some inexperienced drunk woman is trying to like dance on this elevated platform with a spinning pole in a warehouse. And so I keep telling them, get off, get off. And then finally I'm like, you ladies are kicked out. Like, you gotta go. You're not fucking listening. This is a liability. And so I tell them they gotta go and I'm walking behind them and one of them turns around and swings at me and I like go back and I thought I ducked it, but apparently I had a scratch from her ring on my forehead. But I just all of a sudden like grabbed her by the throat and started walking her backwards and like my security came and grabbed her and took her out. So then like some people started calling me hands after that.
Hmm.
Yeah, the warehouse was wild. It shut down because of COVID. Like I was only like one of the only responsible people that I thought, you know. It was like, I don't think we should be throwing after hours in a global pandemic. Everybody else kept throwing them, but I didn't. So then, yeah, ran out of money and left it like June, July, 2020.
One of your stories here is titled Fucking the Crack Dealer I Met at the Tattoo Shop After Work.
Wee! That was in New Orleans when I was off my meds. So the tattoo shop I worked at, I was like doing front desk stuff and also apprenticing with one of the artists. And it was late night. This was his last customer. He was tattooing this guy. And like, again, I moved to New Orleans not knowing anybody and was off my bipolar meds and like drinking, had a radical, erratic sleep schedule, all of that. And so the guy takes a break from the tattoo and is sitting on the front steps and I'm sitting with him and we exchange numbers. And then like after we both leave the shop, I go to his house, which is like in the hood. And I go in and we start fucking. And then he comes out and shows me all of this crack he has. And then all night, and he blockaded his front door with a big couch so it could only open like that much. And so all night people would come and knock on the door and he would like sell them crack out the door. And then it's like morning time and he's like, I'm gonna go get his breakfast. So he leaves me with his gun and he's like, shoot anybody who tries to come in. And he goes and gets McDonald's and then comes back and we eat McDonald's and then I like leave. And that shortly after that was when I met the pimps. I was at a gas station. I was supposed to go party with my tattoo mentor. He was going to take me to this really famous club that I had heard about. But then he didn't text me. And so I was like, fuck it, I'm going home. But I was really antsy. And so I go to the gas station on my way home. And this guy hollers at me. And he's like, hey, let me pay for your gas. And I was like, okay. And then he's like, you want some ecstasy? And I was like, okay. And then he's like, you want to go get po' boys with me and my homie? And I was like, okay. So then we go and we get po' boys. And then we go back to this motel. And he tells me that his friend had just gotten out of prison for like 17 years for murder or something. And I don't know, like, you know, these aren't my most honorable moments. But I blew that guy in the bathroom and then fucked his prison friend and was just yapping about life, just like manic as fuck, and then left and thought I would never see them again. And then blocked their numbers when they started repeatedly calling me and then calling me from other numbers. And then eventually they showed up at my tattoo studio looking for me. And I was like, it's time to leave the country. And that's when I asked my friend if she wanted to go to Guam.
Doing meth with BJ and then meeting the drug dealer scamming lady in Albuquerque.
That was BJ. Yeah, my meth excursion where I was like, I understand why people do meth, but then the come down is not worth it, which is why I think when you do meth, you just always have to be high, and then you just kill yourself slowly, which is so sad. But there was a lot of moments like that. When I was like 13, I had this friend. We were like bad girls, and I don't remember how we got there. We were already so drunk. We got to this motel in Albuquerque with these older guys, and they were like doing drugs and drinking and smoking, and we were hanging out. And then the guy's much older dad comes from a motel room next door with a prostitute. And then, I don't know, me and my friend got scared and, like, left and went down to the front desk to try to get some help. And, like, clearly we're just belligerently drunk, very young girls. And so the front desk lady's calling the cops, and we're like, oh, we're going to get in trouble. So we run. And this is, like, San Mateo area of Albuquerque. Like, it was not a nice area. We run in the middle of the night through a field. I like pee my pants and then eventually like make it home and then like go to middle school the next day.
Tell me about your first tattoo at 17.
Okay. So my first tattoo was the feather and birds flying up. Classic white girl tattoo. Freedom, breaking free, you know, something like that. I found the tattoo artist through a friend. She kind of was a friend, but also like a romantic rival with this one boy we both had a crush on. That was, it was like a whole thing. Albuquerque's so fucking messy. But so she had a much older boyfriend who was a tattoo artist and gave cheap tattoos out of his house. So I go, I'm literally in high school, and I bring two of my friends with me, and I was a... We were theater kids. And so they were like very nerdy theater kids. Like they drank, you know what I mean? But like they were like, Tara, are we safe? I was like, I don't know. They're showing me their guns. Like I was upstairs getting tattooed. There's people doing crack downstairs, I guess hanging out with my high school friends. And they're like, oh my God. And I'm upstairs in the room getting tattooed. And like literally these grown men keep coming up and like showing off their guns to me. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. And I remember I get the outline and I'm like, oh yeah, that's good. Cause it fucking hurt. It was my first tattoo. And he's like, shut up. We're finishing it, and fills it. And then, I continued to get tattoos there for a while. A lot of them I need to cover up. But yeah, that was that experience. And he had these crazy pit bulls that were from a jail. And like, I remember this one time I went to get a tattoo from him, and they left me in the living room with these two dogs, and I smoked weed, and like weed is not, it does not mix well with me. I was so scared and paranoid, and I was sitting there, and these two jail pit bulls who were like the same fucking size as me were sitting there staring at me, and I was like, if I move, they're going to kill me. They did not kill me. And then I went upstairs and got a tattoo. And I actually had to go throw up mid-tattoo because I was so high. Like, it just made me focus on the pain, I think. And I just got really hot. And he thought I was on pills, but I wasn't. It was a whole thing.
You worked underground poker games.
Yes. Okay, so I get back to L.A. from Guam. I have no work. I'm like doing the after hours thing, but I also had an in through a friend who I met through after hours to these underground poker games in Tarzana. They're at like, I don't know if they're mansions, like big houses, whatever, big properties.
What age were you?
This was probably 26, 27. Mm-hmm. Maybe 28, around that age. And yeah, so you go wearing lingerie and stripper heels, and you like sit on dudes' laps as they play poker, and they can like give you poker chips, and like you drink. And there was a pole, and I was the only good pole dancer, so like I would dance on the pole, and they'd throw poker chips at me. And then, you know, some girls were doing tricks in the back. I did once, because money. And that the guy whose house it was, who was running the poker games, I ended up dating him. He was this crazy, fully tattooed German man who owned this porn company. And he kept pressuring me to do porn. And I was always like, no, I don't want to do porn. And then I end up breaking up with him because, you know, whatever, he's crazy, and I stopped doing the poker games, and COVID happens. And so then I lose the after hours money, and there's like no restaurant jobs. I don't know what to do. And eventually I'm like, fuck, maybe I should do porn because they're still shooting, you know, they're still making money. And I hit him up. And very naively, I'm like, I want mine to be different. Like, it needs to be artistic or like, but like, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I shoot, I think, like six scenes with that company. And I got like $400 per scene. That's why I have all of these face tattoos, actually. Well, some of them I already have. But like, the whole thing was it was like an alternative porn company. And so like, a lot of the scenes would be me getting tattooed and fucked at the same time or like after. I have my entire vagina tattooed, actually. There's a video of that. My clit's blacked out. He like lifted up the hood and I'm like singing Britney Spears and Backstreet Boys at the top of my lungs while getting it tattooed. It was so fucking crazy. But then, yeah, it just wasn't worth it. They were like barely booking me. I would only get $400 a shoot. And they like, you know, said all these things. Oh, we'll help you get a car. We'll like help you build your following so you can start making money from OnlyFans and other stuff. And none of that happened. And I was like, so I just did porn, which is never going to get erased. And like, I am fucking broke and don't have a car. Bet. So then we had a falling out. And that was that.
How about a cheery story? You helped your little god sister get a bus ticket?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my little god sister. She lives here now, but grew up with me in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Her dad was my godfather. He actually gave me the name Tara. And he was like the guru of the hippie cult with my dad or whatever. She also had a hard life. Like, her mom was a Mexican immigrant, literally lost her virginity to her dad and got pregnant and then like was traumatized and never had sex again. And he like moved her from a small town in Mexico, not knowing English, to the United States. And this poor woman was just like petrified, hyper religious, and like became kind of abusive to my god sister and like me when I would come over. But it was mostly fear based. Like, I have so much compassion and understanding for this woman now as an adult outside of the situation, like having more perspective and understanding for everything that was going on. But some fucked up shit. I don't want to like tell her story for her. She can come on and tell it. Some fucked up shit happened. Her dad went to jail, and it kind of was like the beginning of the end for him. And he ended up dying when she was 13. And then her and her mom moved to Arizona, and I didn't hear from her again until she was 17. I get a phone call, and it's her. And I'm like, what the fuck? Where are you? And she's like, hey, I need help. I am like on the run or something. Like, I guess she had been sent away to some sort of like treatment center or I don't know. She like escaped and was like, I need help. And I was like, all right, I'm going to buy you a Greyhound bus. And this was like a few days before me and my boyfriend at the time were moving in an RV to Austin, Texas. But I'm like, on the phone, I'm like, okay, I can get you a bus ticket to Albuquerque. Are you going to stay and live with my shitty parents, or do you want to come to Austin? You're going to have to fucking work. And she's like, I'll go to Austin with you. I don't want to be with your parents. So I get her a bus ticket. She fucking misses the Greyhound because she like ran into some crust punks at the train station, and just when you meet her, you'll fucking get it. So I'm pissed, but I'm like, okay, I'm gonna find something. And so the girl I'm trying to connect you with, the professional cuddler, her ex-boyfriend lived in Arizona and was trying to do a trip to Albuquerque. And so he fucking drove. He had never met me before either and wasn't still dating my friend. He drove my psycho little 17-year-old god sister from, I think, like Tucson or something, somewhere in Arizona, to Albuquerque. I do a photo shoot with him. And then me and my 17-year-old god sister I haven't seen in 4 years move in an RV with my boyfriend and my cat and my dog to Austin, Texas. No plan. I, of course, start stripping to support all of us. And I buy her a cell phone. I buy her clothes, makeup, you know what I mean? Like food. And I'm trying to get her jobs. We get her a job at a pizza shop. And she's just being so bad. She, like, we're going to bars and she's fucking drinking. And like, then our bartender friends are like, yo, like, this is a liability. She's sneaking fucking drinks. And I keep having to yell at her. And then I end up taking her phone at one point. I'm like her mom. And I end up taking her phone and I go through it. And she's texting, again, 17, texting all these way older men. And like, who am I to judge? I was like exactly the fucking same one. Texting all these older men and that she like is studying like neuroscience in college and she's 22. And so I text all of them and I'm like, hi, this is her older sister. She's 17. And all of them are like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Thank you for telling me, except for one fucking creep who's like, I don't care. Give her her phone back. But eventually we have a big blow up outside of a bar. I find her in there drinking with her friends. And I'm like, this is like my friend's bar. And she had just been like being so disrespectful to me and like not seeing how like I am taking on the responsibility of her mom and like literally working my ass off at strip clubs and shit to support all of us. And so I throw her shit out of the RV. I didn't speak to her for a while. And then she wound up in LA. And I was just with her delivering her baby, saw it come out of her. And then she wanted to take the placenta home with her. And I didn't know you had to bring a cooler to the hospital to do this. So I ordered her Taco Bell and I got her some chalupas or whatever after she gave birth. So that's a Taco Bell baby. You should sponsor the baby, Taco Bell. And I put the placenta in the Taco Bell bag and smuggled it out of the hospital. And it is still in my freezer to this day.
You almost got married once.
Well, one of the times.
Twice.
More than once. I've been married twice.
You've been married twice.
In the middle of a divorce now. But I almost got married another time to the girl Bex, who was tattooed on my neck. She has dual citizenship, UK American. Her dad is like a Greek billionaire. We became best friends super fast. I met her through this guy who we now both hate. Man, a shitty boyfriend fucking hates me. I'm like, a shitty boyfriend hates to see me befriending his woman. I swear to God, I'm always the end of that relationship. Thankfully, I love that about me. But yeah, I knew him kind of from Austin. And so then we met up and he was with his girlfriend. And like, I saw how shitty he treated her. And so then him and me and her became best friends. She had a really bad drinking problem. And this is before I realized I also was an alcoholic. I was like, oh, she's definitely an alcoholic. Like, I'm fine. I can stop drinking, whatever. So I actually helped her wean off of alcohol a couple of times, like having to like nurse her to health as she's shaking and cleaning up vomit and stuff. But yeah, we like kind of trauma bonded really fast over fucked up childhoods and, you know, having to do sex work and stuff like that, even though she had a billionaire father who paid her rent and gave her money and stuff. Anyways, so we were going to get married so I could go live with her in London. And we had a whole wedding at Echo Park Lake. I had my head shaved at that time because I had just like tattooed my head when I was living on a pot farm trimming. And I come back and whatever. So we're wearing fairy wings and these like sequin fucking pants. And like I have a shaved head and our friend who like had black ink running out of his mouth like officiated us at the park. The pictures are so good. So we did all the things, right? But then we didn't turn in the paperwork to be like, okay, we're officially married. Like he signed it. Everyone signed it. It would have been official if we had turned it in. But we both hesitated for very different reasons. Her dad was like, don't fucking marry her. She's trying to take my money. And I was like, this is a bad idea. Like, this is already, I could, you know, it was tumultuous. Like, neither of us were stable. So we didn't actually get married. We did stay friends for a while after that. And I did end up, like, moving to London for, like, a month with her. She also took me to Australia. But, yeah, drinking and dudes and trauma just really ruined our friendship. And I haven't talked to her in several years. And I covered her name. And she probably covered mine. She had mine tattooed on her neck, too. We got them in London.
Tell me about snorting 15 ecstasy pills when you were 18.
Okay. Stepsister. Yeah. So my sister had just come back to Albuquerque. Again, hadn't seen her since I was like 9 or 10. And she comes back after some really traumatic shit happened to her in Alaska. She comes to Albuquerque to get away from it because, like, small town shit, I guess. And, you know, she needed something fresh. Although I don't know why going back to, like, your original trauma source is the answer, but, you know. Who am I to say? So there was these guys who were older. One of them was a drug dealer who I ended up dating, actually, after this. And we were partying. And, yeah, I did, like, 15 ecstasy pills. And that was when ecstasy pills were really fucking good. Yeah, I snorted probably, like, 7 and took, like, 8. And I've never rolled so hard in my life. And I remember I don't know how this happened. Me and my sister took a shower. I shaved her bush for the first time in her life. Ah, it's so weird. I don't know. Ah, drugs. I don't know. And then we go to a house party. And I'm, like, opening everybody's beers, bottles with my teeth. And at first, it's really fun. And then all of a sudden, like, it's not fun. And, like, me and the drug dealer, older guy, and my stepsister are locked in, like, the host's bedroom. And I, like, my shirt is off. And I throw it behind a TV. And then they're banging on the door. And eventually, they break in. And then, like, the host, like, picks me up over his shoulder and carries me out. And I'm, like, kicking and screaming. And someone's like, oh, that girl has the biggest pupils I've ever seen. And then we get kicked out, and then I think we go back to this other dude's house and, like, watch a movie. I don't know. That was wild. Those were wild times. College was – I truly don't know how I graduated college. Like, so much horrible shit was happening to me, and I was so fucked up all the time. Like, I was partying so hard. It was just like, oh, my God. I don't know.
Tell me about your week in Barcelona.
Okay, so this was also part of that Euro trip I did. Barcelona was before Berlin. Bex and this other friend that I had met in Melbourne when me and Bex went to Melbourne, Australia together, all met up in Barcelona. And me and the guy, I think Bex too, I don't know. We were all staying at this Airbnb, and the host was literally having a baby. Like, when we walked in, she was setting up a birthing pool in the living room to have her fucking baby at any moment. And we were like, all right, out of respect for her, we're going to try to not be here as much as possible. So me and the guy who, like, kind of had a fling, we had a fling in Melbourne, but I was kind of over it at that time. I got over it on that trip. We go to a bar, and, like, I'm kind of crushing on the bartender. And so I'm like, I'm going to stay. So my friend leaves, and he's, like, sad. Sorry. But I'm hitting on the bartender, and then, like, we exchange info. And then, like, after he gets off, I go to his apartment with him. And I'm like, do you want to just be my boyfriend for the week that I'm in Barcelona? And he's like, yeah, let's do it. And I give him his first tattoo. And he takes me to all these nude beaches and, like, all these cool clubs. And it was a lot of fun. I recommend, if you can travel, do so single and get a new boyfriend in every country. And have a way better time.
Tell me about the rugby player in France.
Okay, that was when I studied abroad in Paris. Leo. He played rugby. I don't even know. I must have met him at a bar, you know, as I did those days. And we just had a fling. I don't know. He asked me, like, hey, do you want to go to the north of France to, like, go on a little trip and, like, meet my grandparents? And I had known him for, like, a few days. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. So I, like, take the metro to, like, the outskirts of Paris, and we, like, go over and get in a car and drive all the way up the north of France from Paris. And we stop at his grandparents' house, and, like, it's so beautiful in the countryside. And they spoke no English, and my French was okay at the time. Like, yes, I was going to La Sorbonne and, like, learning French, but I was drinking a lot and not really studying, you know. It was decent. But like, me and his grandma, we got tight. We got tight. I loved her. I remember they made this like pizza and they had this like big raised like tin kind of pool pond thing in their yard. It was so beautiful. And then we like drove up to the coast and I remember like we stopped at this field with these giant hay bales that you had to like climb up onto and we're like sitting on these hay bales and then went to the ocean and like walked up this cliff. And like the north of France is not warm and sunny and amazing like the south of France. Like it's fucking cold and windy and gray, like, and like not sandy beaches, it's like stones, but it was beautiful and amazing. And then shortly after that we hang out again and we're like really drunk and we don't have a place to stay, and like his brother's apartment was nearby and his brother had a very uptight Parisian girlfriend, as they tend to be, and I love that for them. Respect to you, Parisian women. You're uptight. Respect. And so, like, she should not fucking know that we were drunk spending the night in the couch in the living room. And, like, I wake up in the middle of the night and have to vomit, but I remember them saying, like, don't use the bathroom because it's by their bedroom. Don't wake them up. They can't know you're here. So I go to the window in the living room, and I'm puking over the balcony. And then, like, go back to bed. I think I might have peed on the floor at the same time, too. Like, I was butt naked and so shit-faced. And so I wake up and we leave the next day. And then he, like, texts me and he's pissed. And he's like, did you fucking throw up out their window? Like, their downstairs neighbors had vomit all over their balcony and they're fucking pissed. And now my brother's girlfriend is pissed at him because now she knows we were there. And, like, I denied it. I was like, no, I didn't do that. Like, it was dumb of me to deny it. Obviously, it happened. God. But yeah, his grandma, that's what I was talking about, those snake earrings. His grandma gave me these beautiful snake earrings. And I wore them out one night in Paris when I was partying with my friends. We went to some bars and like the bars closed. So we go to the metro to go home to the apartment. And I get on and I realize one of the earrings is missing and I have this split second decision of like, fuck. And I hop off, right? And then the doors close to the metro and I run to look for my earring. Obviously don't find it. Run back to the metro. Turns out that was the last train. And so this guy standing next to me is like, oh, you can come back to my place. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good idea. So we walk to his place and he puts on some movie and we're sitting and chatting and drinking. And I think he put something in my drink, or maybe it was like the one drink too many. I started feeling like, I should not drink this. And then he starts being creepy. So then I go to the bathroom and make myself throw up. And then I throw up a bunch and he passes out on his bed. And then I sneak out and like walk home. That was that. I would rage quit a lot. I would just go to the bars with my friends and then leave without telling anybody because I'd just be over it. And I would just walk wasted barefoot home through Paris, like miles.
That's called rage quitting?
That's what I call it. When I'm fucking over it and I leave without saying anything. That's what I call rage quitting. But my roommates, one time, they were like, they started getting really mad at me because like that's dangerous. That's not smart. That's dangerous. But one time there was this like abstract fountain close to the apartment complex where like big slabs of concrete kind of came up uneven and then the fountain came through. They said they found me with my legs on the ground and the front half of my body down in the fountain one time after the bar was on their way home, and they had to like wake me up out of halfway in this fountain to go home.
You lived a crazy life.
I know.
That's not even all of these stories. That's just some.
Yeah.
Tell me what you've learned after all this craziness that you've been through.
Oh, my God.
What's the most important lesson you've learned?
How fucking lucky I am. And how I very easily could not have been lucky. You know what I mean? That's all it was.
Something bad could have happened.
The reason I'm alive and well.
Something bad could have happened in a lot of these situations.
I mean, a lot of bad things did happen to me, but like worse could have happened. I easily could be dead and like have been trafficked for years as a sex slave. Yeah. So I'm incredibly lucky, protected, whatever it is. And that's my real takeaway is like, don't fucking take that for granted. You know, whenever I feel really suicidal, I think I should remember how lucky and protected by something I have been, and that a lot of other people have not been lucky, you know.
All right, that's enough for now. Tara, thank you so much for sharing some of your crazy stories.
You're welcome.
Maybe we'll do this again.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.